Hello, and welcome to Introducing Me. I'm your host, Sarah. I started this podcast to get to know other people and lifestyles while discovering more about myself. Each episode, I will give a new guest a chance to discuss their background, culture, interests, or whatever they want to talk about to help increase all of our own worldviews. Today, I would like to introduce you to Nicole Lewis, who also goes by Nikki, depending on how you know her. So she is a practicing attorney, but she also started bodybuilding last year at 48 years old. So those are kind of the two major topics she's going to cover today, along with just, you know, being her authentic self. I'm excited to have her here sharing about her life. So thank you so much, Nikki. Why don't you go ahead and tell the audience more about yourself?
All right. Well, first, thank you so much for having me. I am very excited to be chatting with you and sharing just my story, my journey, you know, letting the people know what my life is like, because I'm getting a lot of questions these days, especially because of the bodybuilding. I, as you stated, am a practicing attorney, have been for over 20 years. And so now that I've started bodybuilding, many people are interested in knowing how I transitioned from practicing attorney to bodybuilding, because frankly, I do both of them. I'm still a practicing attorney, and not only am I bodybuilding, I'm a professional bodybuilder, and I continue to compete. I have a competition coming up next month. So those are two major things that I'm doing that I'm really excited about. So which one would you like for me to address first? Because frankly, I got into bodybuilding because of practicing law. And I'm serious. It's because of practicing law and the stress that comes along with practicing law, because my primary practice area is family law. So divorces and everything that comes along with divorces, that's what I do. So I'm dealing with a lot of people who are going through the worst thing they can ever imagine in their lives. So I'm taking all that on. And because I care about people, I want to help people, I want to fix the problem. Most of them can't be fixed. You can only do so much. But because I'm that type of person, I start to feel what my clients are feeling. I start to do what I can to alleviate their stress, alleviate their burdens. And I'm taking all that on, but I have to take care of me in order to be able to help other people. So that's how we go from being the practicing attorney to now I'm finding that fitness is a way for me to alleviate my stress. And when I say I found that fitness is a way to alleviate my stress, that's because I know how to alleviate stress the wrong way. We'll just leave it at that. Wrong way wasn't working for me. And so when I found that working out, it not only made me feel good, it made me look good, but it also helped me to become a better attorney, because it gave me so much clarity about my job and about work and about how to navigate my clients' situations. And so fitness became my sanctuary. It was my peace, my place. That was my way to find me, my way to take care of me. And again, taking care of me means that I can show up for other people. And so it's through the fitness journey, because fitness is not just, gosh, fitness is so much for me. It's not just a workout, you know, it used to be, and that's fine, but fitness evolves. So I started out with fitness being just a workout, and then it evolved into something that became a passion. And that's how I arrived at bodybuilding, because bodybuilding is something that I never, ever, ever would have imagined that I'd be doing, number one. Number two, never would imagine that I'd be a professional bodybuilder. And then number three, I'd never imagined that I'd actually compete as a bodybuilder. So, you know, we can, I guess, unpack that for now. You may have some questions, because I've said a lot already.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, it's good, you know, when you have a stressful job to have a good outlet for stress management. So glad that you have, you know, found that. And you kind of give a little bit of background about, you know, how you want to help people, and, you know, you're in family law. So why don't we start chronologically and go back to, you've been in law for over 20 years. What kind of first pushed you to say, I want to become an attorney and follow that path?
Okay, I've actually told this story before, but I decided that I wanted to become an attorney. I was in the fourth grade and I was doing a book report. My book report required that I stand up in front of the class, give my presentation, and I really enjoyed it. So I thought, as a fourth grader, oh, since I like speaking in front of people, I'll either be a politician or a lawyer. So I decided when I went to college, I majored in political science because I still had politics in the back of my mind, but I also planned on going to law school, which I eventually went to law school. And so that's how the decision was made, a book report, you know, speaking. I enjoyed it, standing up in front of people. That was fun. And so that's how I was able to choose my profession. Once I went to college, graduated, again, degree in political science, went to law school. After law school, I actually started working for the City of Los Angeles mayor's office. So I was working at the mayor's office while I was waiting on my bar results. And so after my bar results came in and I passed, my first attorney job was with Los Angeles County Child Support Services as a staff attorney. And child support is one aspect of family law. And so that's how I got my foot in the door as far as family law goes. And the rest is history, because now I do everything that family law entails.
What are some of your like main responsibilities in family law, being a practicing attorney? Like what kind of, obviously you can't, you know, talk about case specifics, but what are those different pieces that build in together? Because it's not just, say, standing up in court.
Well, yeah, it's not just standing up in court. I mean, it starts with that initial client meeting, because just like with any personal relationship that you have, even though I'm not in a personal relationship with my clients, we still have to gel. So just because you come to me for help, that doesn't mean that you're going to like me as an attorney. That doesn't mean I'm going to like you. So we both have to agree that this is a relationship that we want to enter into, because again, people are dealing with one of the worst situations they can ever imagine. It takes a lot of trust. And so they need to be able to trust me that I'm going to do what's in their best interest. And I need to be able to trust them that they're going to tell me all the things that I need to know. And when I say all the things, I mean good, bad, ugly, not just what you want me to hear, not just the nice stuff because you don't want me to be mad at you. No, I need to know everything. And that takes trust. And so it starts there. And so depending on what the case is, if it's a divorce, especially a divorce with kids, could potentially get really nasty, especially the more assets that are involved. If you think about it, people are more inclined to get angrier when you're messing with their money and their kids. Okay? In family law, when families are going through divorces and they have children and there's money involved, you know, support issues and things like that, you see the best people on their worst behavior. You just see it. It happens. It's life. And so divorce comes with all those things. Even if the parties aren't going through a divorce, maybe they were never married, but they still have children. So you still have those issues when it comes to custody and visitation, child support. You know, and everything that's associated with that, because that comes with a lot of emotion as well, because when kids are involved, you have the extended family members as well. Sometimes if you have grandparents that are close to the minor children, but you have a parent who's not necessarily liking the grandparents, and it can be really, really ugly, to say the least. And so I, as the attorney, have to make sure that I can see the situation. And one of the things I pride myself on doing is being able to see both sides, because you have a client in front of you, they have their perspective. I get that. I understand that. I also sometimes have to say, I need you to think about it from this perspective, the other party's perspective. Clients don't always like that, but you got to think about it that way, because you know what? We're going to be in front of a judge who is going to be thinking about it that way. And so I have to communicate with my clients in a way that gives them the big picture. They want a certain result in their minds. There's a way to get there in their minds. As an attorney, I have to say, I understand you want X. I know how to get you there. Even though it's not going to be the way that you want, I can still get you there. Trust me. Let me get you there. And this is what I'm going to do. And so I keep my clients informed. That way they understand the process, what's going on, and they don't feel left out. They understand. And it just makes the situation easier to deal with. Not easy, easier to deal with, because it's a lot. And look, I've said a lot because it is a lot.
Yes, definitely a lot. You know, when there are more things involved, it's not going to, most of the time, it's not going to be easy. So what is it like, you know, since you do have to take this viewpoint, the judge's viewpoint of they're listening to both sides of a case, you know, at the end of the day, if your client, say, gets everything they want or gets nothing that they want or somewhere in the middle, how do those sort of results kind of impact your work going forward?
Well, if my client gets everything that he or she wants, that's great. If my client gets some of what they want, that's great as well. There are those times the client does not get what he or she wants, period. But I will say this, for me, I am always very realistic with my clients, okay? I know how to manage the expectations of my clients. And so if their situation, if we're going in the situation looks bad, trust me, before a judge ever makes a ruling against them or what they want, I've already told my client, this is a possibility. So my client's not surprised. And when you manage the expectations, the client doesn't like the result, but at least the client was like, well, my attorney told me that. My attorney let me know this might happen. And so the client is satisfied that I did my job. And that's what makes me feel good, even though the result wasn't what we wanted. So again, managing expectations is a really big deal. And I have to say this, not all attorneys handle their cases the way that I do. That's why I said it has to be a right fit. I let the clients know this is how I work. This is how I strategize. This is how I approach this, how I will approach your matter. Some attorneys may just only take their client's side and that's all we're seeing. That's all we're doing. For me, I choose not to do that because again, I'm looking at the bigger picture. We're trying to accomplish something. Let me get you there. And the way that I get there is because I need to be able to anticipate what that other side is going to do. You know, so there are things that go into that, but yeah.
Yeah. No, I think that's an important distinction to make, of course. And, you know, the wanting to make sure, you know, you and the client fit well, you both know what's coming, you know what's happening is definitely a good way to do it. Now, you got into law, you know, originally from this fourth grade speaking option.
Yes, book report.
So what was it like your very first case, like standing up in front of a judge?
Oh, gosh, I have to laugh at that because I remember it vividly. Again, my very first attorney job was with LA County Child Support Services Department. And when I was hired by LA County Child Support Services Department, I was hired, I want to say maybe 2 weeks or so after the other new attorneys were hired. For 2 weeks, the other attorneys, the brand new attorneys, they had training, they were in classes, and you know, they were able to at least wrap their minds around what they were about to be doing. When I was hired, you know, last one hired, training was already done. So my form of training was shadowing. I was shadowing the more senior attorneys with LA County Child Support Services Department. So I started on a Monday. By Friday, I was standing in front of a judge, very first hearing, and I did have one of my mentors with me, and she was amazing. Shadowing her was so amazing. It was such an amazing experience that she wasn't even paying attention when my hearing was going on. And the judge asked me a question, and I didn't know the answer. And I turned around and I looked at her really quickly. She was engaged in a conversation with another attorney. And I just turned around and I said to the judge, I gave the judge my response just off the cuff. And the judge was like, oh, okay. And started writing. I'm thinking like, wow, my answer was okay. So that was when I knew all you have to do is pause, think about what you're being asked, provide a response. You don't have to say, hey, I don't know. I was not about to tell the judge, I don't know. And so I had to think, what am I going to say? And fortunately, my response was sufficient and I was able to get the order I was looking for. And to this day, I don't think my mentor ever knew that happened. So that was my first time, but it was a great experience. It let me know that I can go off the cuff. I can think on my feet. I don't have to have some script in front of me. And that was a very pivotal moment because as I communicate with you right now, I'm the same way. I hate scripts. So if anyone that I've ever worked for in the past had given me a script or anything, I'm like, I don't do scripts. I need to be able to speak off the top of my head. I need to respond to what's being asked of me in a way that's comfortable for me. I don't do well with scripts and looking at pieces of paper. I'm just not good with that. So
you learn your speaking style. You know, you got that first thing right off the cuff there.
Yeah.
So what has your career trajectory been like since this first position at the LA County Child Support Services Department to where you are now?
Well, after LA County Child Support Services, which is considered public sector, you know, government job, it was supposed to be secure, but it wasn't. I was never aware that the government had financial issues before. You know, you're told when you're younger, hey, if you work for the government, that's the, you know, that's a job that's safe. You can retire, you know, from working for the government. And we had a budgetary crisis in California. So remember I told you I was the last one hired. So I, along with the other new attorneys, we were on the chopping block. We all got pink slips from the government. Okay, this was supposed to be our secure job, right? It wasn't. And so I ended up getting a job in the private sector and I basically stayed in the private sector the entire time. Fortunately, because I worked for LA County Child Support Services Department, that was an amazing experience because I was in court all the time. I was in court all the time, not just with child support hearings, but sometimes I had to go to the branch courts and I would be a participant in the family law hearings, but only for child support purposes. So I could sit there and listen to all the family law crap and let the family law attorneys duke that out. And then if LA County Child Support was enforcing, you know, a child support order, I can only, you know, I only have to address the child support issue. So I didn't have to deal with the messy stuff, but I was exposed to the messy stuff, which is how I got into all the messy stuff now. And so that's where I am doing all of the family law issues. Although let me say this, I am very selective. Because I've reached a point in my career, because I've been practicing law for such a long time, and I work for myself. So I choose the messy cases that I want. I choose if I want a messy case. I might not want a messy case right now, in which case I can say, nope, I'm not going to take it. But at least I know enough attorneys that if I have someone who comes to me and they need help and they can pay, I can actually send them to quite a few attorneys who'd be able to do an amazing job to assist them. So,
right. Well, I'm sure, you know, throughout your career, like working for yourself, it changes over time. But what is kind of a normal caseload for you?
Well, that varies. That really does vary, especially now, because I'm in the process of scaling my business. So I'm still going to be figuring out what my normal caseload is. And I use that, you know, I use air quotes for the normal caseload, because not only am I scaling my law firm, but I now am a competitive bodybuilder. So that's a part of my life as well. And so those are two things that I'm navigating right now, scaling my law firm, working on competing as a professional bodybuilder, and how I'm going to absorb the influx of clients that I'm going to be getting. And the short of it is I'm going to have to hire at least an associate. I already have a paralegal, but I'm going to have to hire at least one associate. But I'm not sure. Fingers crossed, my caseload will be so big, I'll have to have at least three associates. So I'm just not there yet to be hiring three associates. But with the direction that I'm moving in and with the goals that I have set in place, that's what we'll be looking at before the year is up.
Great. Well, it's an exciting time to be in transition to scaling your business and figuring out, you know, what can you do? You know, you don't want to be handing someone a pink slip like you got when you were, you know, first working.
I know.
So then let's talk a little bit about bodybuilding and how, you know, just regular sort of athleticism turned into first just even bodybuilding, not even like competing, but bodybuilding in itself.
Yeah, well, it's funny that you mentioned athleticism because I do come from an athletic family. Now, even though I was athletic, I was a fat kid. Okay. I have always had an issue with weight, always had an issue with food. I was such a large kid that my mom thought she was going to have to put me on a diet. When she would shop for my clothes, I did not fit the clothes that were in the kids section. I had to shop in the junior miss section. So I was wearing women's clothes as a kid. And I can't even explain how that made me feel to know that I couldn't fit kids' clothes because I was too big. So even though I was big, I was athletic. I was just big. Back then, because I'm going to be 49 next month, when I was little, I didn't see larger kids on sports teams. I didn't see that. I didn't see the larger kids doing the things that interest me, dancing, sports, all that. I didn't see larger kids doing that. But I was smart, so I always stuck with the smarts. Always stuck with that part. So as I got older, even though I was bigger, I started to, you know, lose a little weight once I got into junior high school, you know, junior high school and high school. And so I started playing sports when I was a freshman. That's when I really started playing sports because I was comfortable enough to, you know, wear little shorts and a jersey. I played basketball and I played softball. So being athletic definitely helped because I got into the habit of having to do things like run, you know, play defense, dribble basketballs, you know, shoot hoops, you know, things like that, things that you do for whatever sport that you're playing. So I got used to doing things like that. And that was great. But I still never considered myself to really just really be this athlete or to be I definitely wasn't thinking about any type of weightlifting and bodybuilding or anything like that, because, again, I didn't think that I, Nicole, who was this, you know, fat kid, could, you know, do anything that would be considered in the fitness profession. I don't have that background. So, nope, that's not for me. I didn't come from that type of family, even though my dad, he played semi-professional sports and my brother was a very good athlete. I wasn't the one who was the true athlete in the family. So I never took that on. And so, again, becoming an attorney and also having played sports, I at least knew about a gym. I knew about fitness centers. There was an awareness, you know, about, you know, lifting weights and working out. And so that just ended up evolving over time. And I can tell you that the pivotal moment where things really changed for me was when I was in Southern California. Again, I'm a practicing attorney, and my work had gotten so stressful that I gained a lot of weight. And when I say gained a lot of weight, I mean, it's to the point where I was unrecognizable. There were people who knew me and would stare me in my face and didn't know it was me because I had gained that much weight. And once I was too embarrassed to go to the gym to work out to lose the weight, that's when I knew, got to make a change, but I needed to figure out what can I do because I'm too embarrassed to go to the gym, but I need to lose the weight. It was just a hot mess, okay? I was not in a very good place. And what I ended up doing is I started small, started walking outside. I lived in Southern California, beautiful neighborhood. I lived in the Valley. Shout out to Sherman Oaks, Encino. I lived out there. So I would walk, you know, and I purposely would not wear headphones. I wanted to hear birds chirping. I wanted to hear the rustle of the leaves. I wanted to hear the breeze. I wanted to hear the wind blow. I wanted to be in touch with things of nature because it gave me a sense of peace. It gave me clarity. And I went from walking to jogging to running, and the weight was coming off. Now, I did change my diet as well. I got to throw that in there. I wasn't just eating any old thing. I was changing my diet. But the weight started coming off, and I saw the physical transformation. But the physical transformation was just a manifestation of what was going on the inside. My inside was coming out, and I was loving it, you know, because I started figuring out what was bothering me, first of all. So I'm like, okay, now I know what the issue is. Make those changes, and then just continue to do what you need to do to get into a better place. So I hope I answered your question. I'm like that.
Yeah, you took us through, you know, some fitness journey. That's a good thing to do. So then with bodybuilding, how did like that specifically start? And what even like is bodybuilding for somebody who like wouldn't want to compete, but likes the interest, like it likes the idea of bodybuilding?
Oh, somebody who wouldn't want to compete, but like the idea of bodybuilding, you mean me? That was exactly what I said. This is how I got started bodybuilding. Okay. During the pandemic, let's go to the pandemic. During the pandemic, I discovered that weightlifting wasn't so bad. Prior to the pandemic, whenever I was in the gym, I was always on a treadmill. Sometimes a Stairmaster, hardly ever on a bike, but I would never, ever, ever lift weights. Never. Didn't want to lift weights. Didn't like lifting weights. Completely averse to lifting weights. Pandemic comes around. I don't have a treadmill at my house. So now I'm like, oh my goodness, what do I do? Because I am a foodie. I'm not kidding. I'm a foodie. I would have my cheat days every single Sunday. And when I say a cheat day, you'd be amazed at all the things that I ate during my cheat day. So I could no longer have my cheat day because I no longer have my treadmill. So then what do? I had to figure out a way to get cardio in using dumbbells. And that's what I did. I would go in my garage, grab some dumbbells, and do what would be considered a cardio workout, but with dumbbells. So I was lifting weights. I started looking at videos of how to lift weights and do different things. And I was also training at this time to be a fitness coach. And so I had access to all kinds of resources and people who knew way more about fitness than I did. And I was still learning. So I end up becoming a fitness professional and start coaching. And as I'm coaching, I'm seeing all these other people have these great transformations and they're loving my coaching and thinking I'm great. And I'm thinking, what about me? I'm like, I no longer have time to make myself, you know, look the way that I want to look, because sometimes it is aesthetic. Okay. So it's not that I was big, but there was a look that I was going for. I wanted to be more muscular and I wasn't putting on the muscle like I wanted to. So I'm like, I think I need a trainer. And so I knew, or at least I believed, let me just say this. I believed I did not want to compete at all, but I wanted to look like I competed. And that is what I told the person I reached out to. I reached out to a trainer in Georgia, and asked him whether or not he knew of any personal trainers in the Bay Area. I said, look, I want to look like I compete, because this particular trainer who I reached out to, he trains, you know, women in, and probably men as well. Yeah, he trains men as well, for, you know, competitions, bodybuilding competitions. And he competes as well. So I wanted to know who could train me to look like a competitor, even though I didn't want to compete. And that's how I found my trainer. My trainer, who I absolutely love, Gabby Vega. She is so amazing. She also competes. She's a pro bodybuilder. And I started training with her, I think it was in September. Let me see. We're in 2024. I want to say maybe 2022, I think, September 2022. And that was my goal. I want to look like I compete, but I don't want to compete. But as she started training me, and she's also a certified nutritionist, she, you know, provided me with my nutrition plan. I started seeing my body change in a way that I never imagined. And then I realized, wait, I have some great genes, because I've seen my dad's old pictures. I know what he looked like and how his body was. So I'm like, wait a minute. I have something in me that I might be able to use to my advantage. Let me see where this thing can take me. And so as my body started to change, I said, whoa, I might be onto something. And so Gabby, she knows exactly what she's doing when it comes to training the body and making sure I have the appropriate nutrition. And so I just listen to whatever she tells me to do. She takes the guesswork out of everything. I do what she tells me to do. My body makes the appropriate adjustments and changes, and it looks great. And so that's how I ended up competing, because I was so pleased with the way that my body looked. And I wanted to know, what else can my body do? What else can I do? Hey, Nicole, do you have the courage to get on the stage in a two-piece? You know, you used to be that little fat kid. Do you have the courage to get on stage in a two-piece and clear heels, the Lucite heels, the stripper heels? I love those heels. Do you have the courage to get on stage and, you know, compete in a show? And I challenged myself, and I was pleasantly surprised with the outcome, not just of my first show, because I did go pro my first show, but just the everything, the way that it felt being on stage. It felt very liberating. I felt like I belonged there. I knew I stumbled onto something that changed my life. It changed my mindset. It let me know I can do any and everything I put my mind to. And competing has made me a better attorney. It's made me a better businesswoman, because, I mean, I've mentioned scaling my law firm. I'm doing other stuff too. So it's like my mind has been so blown and changed in such an amazing way that I'm doing all kinds of things I never would have imagined that I would do, because I'm just no longer afraid to do it. And I'm like, no, I know what I'm capable of, and I'm ready to do it.
Yeah, that's really awesome to like find that confidence and say, you know, this might have been my past, but I'm going to take a chance and do this and find a great place on the stage. So what does a competition entail? Like, what sort of things do you have to do? And like, are there multiple rounds to a competition?
Well, it starts with the preparation. When I competed for the first time, and actually in, let me see, we're in 2024, these months are going by really fast. So last year, I chose to compete as a wellness competitor. And in the wellness category, the focus is on your quads, and they also focus on your glutes. So the lower half of your body. So knowing that I was going to be in that particular category, that let my trainer know how, you know, what type of training program she needed to create for me for the competition, and also what type of meal plan. So that's the preparation part. So I let my trainer know this is the show that I'd like to participate in. And I also inquire, is there enough time for me to get ready? Because you need to give yourself time for the show. It's like, you can't just say, oh, I'm going to compete 2 weeks from now. And you haven't even started anything. That's not how it works. It takes time. There's a process. And so I make sure I have enough time for preparation. I have my workouts scheduled, whether it's with my trainer or on my own. I have my meal plans for every single day. My trainer lets me know what I'm supposed to eat, the time that I'm supposed to eat. And if I have any questions, I always let her know. Make sure I get 8 hours of sleep, or at least 7 to 8 hours of sleep. I try to do that all the time. And I do it most of the time. There are some times when I fall short, though, and I don't beat myself up for that. But 7 to 8 hours of sleep, definitely getting in at least a gallon of water. Okay, so I'm always using the bathroom. Always running back and forth to the bathroom, you know? And so those are key things that I do in terms of preparation. You know, making sure you get the rest, your training, your meals, getting that water in. And you also have to think about, you know, a suit that you're going to wear. And so fortunately, I found an amazing swimsuit designer, Allison Bennett. Love Allison. She's designed all my swimsuits for the shows that I've competed in. And so that's a part of it as well. Your attire, you know, you have to order your shoes. You have to get your jewelry. You have to decide what you want to do with your hair. Are you going to get your makeup done at the venue by, you know, the makeup artist? You have to schedule your tanning. There are all these things that you need to do for the show. And I'd say the day of the show is just really a lot of sitting around and waiting, you know, you're waiting for your category to come up, and you go out there and you do your thing, and you're not on stage that long. It doesn't seem that way unless you're holding those poses, and it feels like it's forever when you're trying to hold that smile. It is so difficult holding the smile. So being on stage doesn't take a whole heck of a lot of time. There's a lot of sitting around and waiting. And again, that's just the day of the show. But I'm not going to lie. I focus more on the preparation and the journey, because that's the part that I enjoy the most. I never would have imagined, because it's so true. I enjoy the discipline that it takes to have to compete in a show. And it takes discipline. You have to have I call it a special mental strength. There are a lot of us who are mentally strong. Yes, you're strong. You have a strong mind. But there's this extra that you need if you're going to be that disciplined for that long. To compete in a show. It's not just about, oh, I eat healthy. No, you have to eat specific things at specific times. You need to weigh your food. You need to have all these things go into it. And when you do those things, when you actually do what you're supposed to do, the competition is the cherry on top. That's just the fun part. And the day of the competition, my thoughts are, oh, I can't wait until this is over. That way I can have some potato chips or a burger or something. That's where my head is on competition day. Like, I get to eat. So yeah, I'm more about the journey and the prep, the discipline from the prep. And then once we get to the show, it's like, okay, yeah, this is fun. And that's great. I love the prep.
Yeah, so you love the discipline, you know, kind of the working towards this goal, this fun moment that then you can maybe let a little loose afterwards, have the burger chips. Do you think there'll be a point in this journey of bodybuilding that you'll stop competing?
The short answer is yes, absolutely. Because in my opinion, again, this is just my opinion. I don't know how other people feel. In my opinion, I don't think I'll be able to just do this for years, you know? And when I say do this, it's the bodybuilding, the competitive bodybuilding. I can still be a bodybuilder and not compete. But the actual competitive bodybuilding, along with all these other businesses that I'm building, I don't know that I can just continue to do that, because my life is going to be changing. And so what I'm doing is I'm focusing on where I am right now in this period that I am right now in my life, which is so amazing. And I'm doing what I can during this period. And as my life continues to change and everything continues to grow and I continue to thrive and flourish, I'll make the adjustments. Now, what it may end up being for the near future is that I just won't compete as often, you know, because right now I'm at least 3 shows a year. That's where I am right now, at least 3. But I love having a goal that's set and then working towards that. And so I think, again, part of the process, you have that competition. That's your, you know, that's your goal. You're trying to make it there. And so you go through that process. And so I like that. So when I'll stop, I'm not sure, but we'll just see, you know, where my life's journey takes me, because there are so many amazing things happening for me. We'll see if competing still fits into my schedule. I don't see why I wouldn't do it because I really enjoy the process.
Right. Yeah. You got to see where it takes you. Now for the different shows, have you switched up categories or do you kind of like stick to the same sort of position? Like what's your specialty?
Well, I'm glad you asked because I am doing a new category. I am doing a new category. And I just have to say this. I'm a fitness expert contributor for Strong Fitness Magazine. Love Strong Fitness Magazine. And Strong Fitness Magazine has such an amazing team, and they have been very instrumental in me becoming, I say becoming a bodybuilder, because they saw something in me that I didn't necessarily see in myself. And, you know, once someone sees something in you, you're like, really, you see that? I'm like, okay, well, maybe let me try it. So Strong Fitness Magazine saw something in me, and I was in the magazine. I was featured in the magazine, and it lit a spark in me. And so now I'm a fitness expert contributor. And I said all that to say my most recent column says new year, new category. And so that column is about the fact that I am now going to be competing as a figure competitor. Now, if you're wondering why the switch, I'm a natural bodybuilder. And there's nothing wrong with being, I don't want to say unnatural, but there's nothing wrong with being a bodybuilder in my opinion. There's nothing wrong with being a bodybuilder who uses performance enhancing substances. It's permitted in other competitions, fine. I happen to be a natural bodybuilder, no substances allowed whatsoever, okay? Now, if you look at me, I look like I could be taking something, and I don't. It's genetics. I'm very muscular. And so when I initially started competing, again, as a wellness competitor, the focus is on your quads, your glutes. My quads, oh my goodness, are amazing. I have some amazing quads. So naturally I gravitated toward the wellness division like, whoa, you focus on quads? I've got quads. But as a natural bodybuilder, I'm more muscular than the other women in that particular category. So I competed 3 times last year in the wellness division, and I did well. My last show, I didn't win. I did place. I placed 5th. That's great. Again, the competition is just a cherry on top. So I was just happy to make it through the process and have fun during the show. But I knew after that 3rd show, especially when I was able to go back and look at the footage, how much more muscular I was than the other women. And it was just like, yep, Nicole, you're about to go into figure. At least when you're competing in natural bodybuilding competitions. If I decide to compete in competitions that aren't natural bodybuilding competitions, I probably would compete as a wellness competitor or a wellness athlete. So, but as a natural bodybuilder, I'm now going to be doing figure. It's going to be my category. And as a figure athlete, they like looking at the shoulders. shoulders, you know, and the back and all that stuff and that tiny waist, and your upper body is focused on more than the lower body, you know, which is focused on in wellness. And so I've been doing more work with my trainer, developing my upper body now versus my lower body. I mean, we still work on my lower body as well, but now we're doing more exercises focused on the upper body because that's where the focus is for the figure category. And I was already considered, and this is what I was told. I've been told this by multiple people in the bodybuilding arena. I was like a crossover as a natural bodybuilder. I was a crossover because of my quads. Yeah, you can do wellness, but because of your upper body, wow, you fit in figure as well. And so I've done wellness. Now we're going to do figure and see where figure takes me. And then hopefully I'll have a choice to make, like, okay, am I going to do wellness or am I going to do figure? But I'm excited to be doing figure and just working on my shoulders and my arms and my back and all these other things that just, gosh, they make me look and feel great.
Yeah, I mean, that's really fun to, you know, new year, new, now you're going to figure. So that's exciting to hear. Yeah. how you're able to do that as well with, you know, the good genes that you got. So yeah, hopefully the new options work out and you can and have choices in the future.
Oh yeah, I believe it will. I'm excited.
Yeah. Now, before I start to wrap things up, is there anything else you would like to share with the listeners today?
Well, I would like to share a couple of things with the listeners, because one of the things that people inquire the most about, it has to do with food. They want to know, what are you eating? You know, I've had people tell me, oh, well, Nikki, you were in shape before, but now, oh my goodness, what are you eating? Everybody wants to know what I'm eating. And what I've told people is that right now I am in competition prep. This competition prep diet, and I'm using air quotes, is not fit for normal people, okay? So it's like, I'm not telling people, this is what you eat, because people are really just wanting to lose weight. And so they wanna know, well, what are you eating? I think I'll lose weight with what you're eating. It's not about what I'm eating. I'm in competition mode, and I have a certified trainer who knows me, who studies my body and knows what I need and proceeds with the plans accordingly. So I've encouraged people to, if it's feasible, find a nutritionist. If you're wanting to look a certain way, then consider a trainer. I was someone in the past who said I never, ever wanted a trainer. Gabby is literally my first trainer. She's the only person I've ever trained with. I got lucky because I love her. And I think that you need to have a trainer who you actually connect with. And again, I got lucky because my first trainer, Gabby, first, the only, we've connected. And so I encourage people, nutritionists, trainers, there are some great meal plans out there. You know, if sometimes it can get a little costly, but if you cook, you know, use things like ground turkey breast, you know, you can eat more vegetables and things like that. Drink water and make sure you're getting plenty of sleep. A lot of people don't understand your body needs to recover. You need to get proper rest. And if you make those little tweaks, it'll make such a huge difference. But because I'm a foodie, I want to, you know, keep it real. It gets hard sometimes. You want to eat something that tastes really good. That's why it's important to have healthy snacks. You have to have healthy snacks, and you can't just overindulge in your healthy snacks, especially those that are good. I'll be honest, one of my favorite snacks right now, or I shouldn't say right now because it's not on my meal plan, but I did have it earlier when I was farther away from my competition. My competition is coming up, so I have to make sure I stay, you know, strictly with my diet. But Munch Better has these brownies. So if you're a brownie lover like me, you need to go to munchbetter.com and purchase brownies, because they taste so good. You don't even, you don't think that you're eating something that's healthy, and it actually really is healthy. Okay. And so it's important that you find healthy alternatives that taste good, because then you'll understand eating healthy doesn't mean the food is going to taste bad. And you'll be more inclined to eat healthy if you find something healthy that tastes really good. And so I've been giving people these brownies and telling them, look, you need to try it, because again, this will help you move in the right direction, because nutrition is actually more important for the majority of the world than the workout. If you get your eating together, you'll find that you're looking and feeling a lot better. And then working out, just make sure you move your body. You know, you wouldn't even need a trainer. So those are the things that I'd like to leave the listeners with, because I feel like those are things that are tangible. Those are things that people can actually do. You can actually make those small changes and adjustments without turning your life upside down, or without feeling like you're sacrificing something, because that's when people start, you know, being a little bit more resistant. They feel like they're giving up something. And so I'm saying that you don't have to feel like you're giving up anything when you have things like a Munch Better brownie. And there are 4 flavors. You can go on the website, munchbetter.com, and you'll see there are options out there. And people can reach out to me, and I can maybe give them some additional tips, because people have very specific questions sometimes. And so you can't answer everything, but I at least wanted to throw something out there just in general, something that people can, you know, tweak and implement, you know, relatively quickly.
Yeah, it's a great things to share and to make point of noting. Like, it's not just, you know, fitness, working out. It's not just, you know, how you eat. It's also how you sleep. So I appreciate you sharing that here at the end. Now, at the end of all my episodes, I do ask my guests a random question. So my question for you today is, what would you do with $1 million?
Okay. Well, I'd invest in multiple businesses. Potentially acquire some.
All right, that brings this episode to a close. So, of course, if you would like to connect with Nicole, we'll have a couple links in the description. If you'd like to check out her law firm's website will be in the description, and her personal Instagram will also be in the description. So if you want to check her out more on the personal side, you know, all of the bodybuilding and fun stuff she's got going on there, feel free to check out either of those links. If you'd like to connect with the podcast, our website is in the description. That brings you to all of our past episodes. So I encourage you to go listen to other episodes. It brings you to past guests, resources, social media, all of those good links. And our social media, we are on Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn. So following those pages, that support is always appreciated. If you'd like to support the podcast monetarily, there is a link to do that as well. And if you would like to share your story on the show and be a guest, my email is in the description. That is always the best way to reach me. So thank you so much, Nicole, for spending time with me today, and to my listeners for taking the time out of your day to hear a new story. Until next time, bye.
Okay, bye.